Siobhan Chapman here, and welcome to UBS On Air. I am pleased to welcome you to House Call, talking equity markets with UBS Asset Management. Today, I am pleased to welcome to the show Jeremy Zirin, Senior Portfolio Manager of the Houseview Equity Portfolios and Head of the Private Client U.S. Equity Team, and Dominic Shager, Senior Equity Investment Specialist with UBS Asset Management. So let's dive right into it. Dom, I'll pass it over to you for some Q&A.
Thank you, Siobhan. We appreciate you having us on the show. So, Jeremy, after months of speculation, the Fed Reserve has cut interest rates by 50 basis points. What do you think drove their decision, and what are your thoughts on the Fed's course of action for long-term investors?
Yeah, it was a big week ever since Fed Chair Jay Powell signaled at Jackson Hole in late August that the Fed was ready to start lowering the Fed funds rate. There's been a big debate on whether the Fed would cut rates by 25 or 50. As you mentioned, they decided to go big with a 50 basis point rate cut to jumpstart the easing cycle. However, Chair Powell also indicated that we really shouldn't be looking for any more, you know, so-called jumbo-sized rate cuts going forward. You know, the decision to go 50 instead of 25 seemed to be more of a catch-up action by the Fed rather than, you know, driven by fears of a sharper economic slowdown. In his press conference following the rate decision, Powell essentially admitted that they would have started cutting interest rates back in July if they had all of the revision data on the labor market that were to the downside. And so while we got the 50 basis point cut this month, you know, going forward, you know, the Fed is signaling that they're likely to put in 2 25 basis point rate cuts later this year and then reduce rates by another 100 basis points during calendar year 2025, which would put the Fed funds rate closer to about 3.25 by the end of next year. In their summary of economic projections, they also now expect the unemployment rate to rise a little bit, but largely stay close to its current level through the end of next year, and that inflation gradually drifts to just about back to its 2% target by the end of 25 as well. So, you know, taking all of this together, the Fed seems to be increasingly confident that we will see a soft landing for the economy. For long-term investors, I think the 25 or 50 debate was pretty meaningless. What really matters is that we see the combination of resilient economic and corporate profit trends combined with the beginning of a Fed easing cycle. And we agree with the Fed that recession risks largely seem fairly low here, and that, you know, translating that to the equity market, we think that the bull market's not over. Ultimately, I think stocks are likely to see higher highs over the next couple of years, and investors should largely stay the course to participate in that upside.
Great. So as we've discussed in prior calls, in the first half of the year, market gains were extremely concentrated in select large cap growth stocks. Jeremy, can you speak to what has happened so far in the third quarter? It seems like we've seen a lot more volatility recently, especially in the tech sector.
Yeah, that's right. Within the market, things to get more interesting. You know, in the first half of the year, while the S&P 500 was up by over 15%, two sectors, technology and communication services, rose nearly 30% and drove the broader index higher. But the remaining nine sectors in the S&P averaged just a mid-single digit advance. And now the reason for that sort of extreme concentration in just a couple of growth-oriented sectors was partly due to enthusiasm over artificial intelligence, to be sure, and the tech sector's exposure to that theme, but also due to the fact that earnings trends for the rest of the market outside of tech were generally fairly poor. And with the Fed pushing out interest rate cuts into the second half of this year, investors were hesitant to underwrite an improvement in earnings trends outside of AI-focused stocks or other secular growth stories. But if you look at the market and sector leaderboard so far in the second half of the year, what you find is that the market is still grinding higher, with the S&P up, you know, low to mid-single digits over that time, but market leadership has completely switched. You know, the top performing sectors so far in the second half of 2024 have been real estate, utilities, financials, and industrials, which are all value-leaning sectors that generally benefit from a normalization of interest rates, while the tech and the communication service sectors are roughly flat and have lagged the broader market. So this speaks to the theme that we've been advocating for some time, calling for a broadening out of market gains beyond the so-called Magnificent Seven. And if the economy does indeed continue to show resilience as we expect, you know, earnings trends for many more cyclical areas of the market should improve into 2025, which we think will drive a continuation of, you know, healthy gains for some of the current or more value-oriented market leaders. As for tech, I do think AI is a durable theme and that investors want to have exposure to it through select semiconductor and software stocks and some ancillary AI plays in AI infrastructure in industrials and utilities. But investors should be mindful of not letting some of those positions get too large in relation to the rest of your portfolio. And also, investors should be prepared for volatility to continue in the tech sector. Valuations are on the high side of historical ranges, and there is a growing debate on both the magnitude and the timing of how companies will monetize the massive capital spending being deployed in the space.
So now I'm going to switch gears for a bit. We're less than 2 months away from the presidential election. How does the election influence your thinking on the markets? And how are you positioning the portfolios?
Yeah, I'll answer the second part first, and that we're not making any meaningful portfolio changes in front of the election, and that's for a few reasons. First, the election is too close to call, so we don't know who will be in the Oval Office, nor do we know the makeup of Congress, both of which will help determine which, if any, policy changes will actually occur over the next 4 years. But more importantly, you know, our strong belief backed by empirical evidence is that at a market level, it probably doesn't matter which party wins. Economic and company fundamentals, pardon the pun here, trump politics in terms of what's important for markets. And so let's look at, you know, the last 8 years as an example, right? Former President Trump and current President Biden couldn't be more different in terms of policy stances on taxes and spending and foreign affairs. And they have sharply different visions for the future of the country. But if you look at market returns over their respective presidencies, what actually stands out is how similar the market has performed. You know, so from November 8th, 2016, the day that President Trump was elected, to November 3rd, 2020, the end of the Trump presidency, the day Biden was elected, the S&P 500 was up 70% on a total return basis. From September 3rd, 2020, the beginning of Biden's presidency, to the end of last month, the S&P 500 was up 78%. So very similar returns over the four-year period for both Trump and for Biden. And this is despite the fact that they were very different political regimes. And this just reinforces our view that politics take a backseat to economic fundamentals and driving market returns. But more specific to the upcoming election and potential policy changes, I'd emphasize that at a market level, the big issues are tax policy, and more specifically, you know, what happens with the expiration of the Tax Cut and Jobs Act at the end of 2025, potential regulatory changes, and potential tariffs. And right now, prediction markets suggest that Congress will likely be split. You know, the Republicans have about a 75% chance to win the Senate. Democrats have about a two-thirds chance of winning the House. So if we do get a divided government, I'd argue that policy changes will likely be more muted or at least more incremental than transformational, and thus unlikely to meaningfully change the course of existing economic trends.
So staying on that train of thought, where do you see the most opportunity in the current equity market? And how would you approach asset allocation given the current environment?
Yeah, from an asset allocation perspective, it's a bit tricky. You know, while the backdrop of resilient growth and easing inflation and a Fed that's pivoting to cutting rates all should be a tailwind for risk assets and stocks, you know, valuations at a market level are not all that attractive with the S&P 500 trading at 21 times forward earnings. So maybe said a bit differently, the market already expects a soft landing, and at least some of that outcome is priced in. And if you look at stock main competition in portfolios or bonds, returns for fixed income are generally fairly solid in a Fed easing cycle, particularly for longer duration bonds. So I think a balanced approach between stocks and bonds makes a lot of sense in the current environment. Within the equity market, I expect that the recent trends of market gains broadening out beyond the mega cap tech space, you know, to continue. It doesn't mean to abandon some of those, you know, really good, you know, companies with strong fundamentals that are secular growth stocks, but areas of the market, you know, that have lagged over the past couple of years that should benefit from a lower rate environment and a sustained economic expansion and a rebound in their profitability, from our lens, looks poised to lead the next leg of the bull market. So by sector, you know, this would include some pockets of financials, which are more levered to a rebounded capital market activity, some industrials that should see earnings rebound as global industrial production recovers. You know, life science and tools within healthcare looks promising as an earnings rebound candidate as lower rates spur more spending by biotech startups. Housing-related stocks should benefit from lower mortgage rates as housing turnover increases. Within tech, you know, analog semiconductor manufacturers look poised to see stronger end markets. So overall, you know, I would say it's still a balanced approach. We still like AI as a theme, but we'd be, you know, a bit more selective and buy on weakness for some of the names that are more in the secular growth camp, while tilting portfolios a bit more towards some of those cyclical value areas that I just outlined.
But before we close the call, if all our listeners should take one key takeaway from this discussion, what should it be?
Yeah, if I had to sum it up in one sentence, Don, I'd say stay invested,
stay diversified.
I'm going to try. Okay, so stay invested, stay diversified, and try to tune out the political noise that, you know, can be deafening during the run-up to a presidential election.
Jeremy, thank you again for your insight.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreement and disclosures that we provide to you about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary or ask your UBS financial advisor for a copy.